Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
I know there's a lot of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
So, if you're looking for a graceful exit, go straight to hell. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Just keep collecting misery and grief and corpses and dead people and, Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. As I was saying, before the evil flying monkey right satellite beams blew out the power to our studio in the middle of the program last night, that was weird. That was really bizarre. We had a brief flutter, and then wham, and it was out for about 3 hours. Where we broadcast from is we are not in an urban area. We are out a ways. I guess you would call this semi-rural. And a lot of trees around here. And just, I know you don't want to hear this, but I'll just tell you very quickly. Atlanta had about an eight-year-long, North Georgia did, about an eight-year-long drought, which finally broke about 3 years ago. But in that period of time, so many of these huge trees, and we have monster trees in North Georgia. So many of them, the root systems were weakened, and now when there is a storm that comes through here, these trees come down and kill people and destroy power lines and so on and so forth. So that's what happened last night. We are at the strong urging of our flagship station and the owners of Nova M. We're getting an emergency generator. Is that right? Is that what we're getting, Kathy? Okay. Oh, God. Let's get a bunch of canned food, too. And dehydrated water pills. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah, the Three Stooges meet Iraq. And after what happened today with Maliki or whatever the hell his name is in Bush, we can pick it up right back there. Bush and Maliki had a press conference in the middle of the night, U.S. time. And so we have moron sounds for you tonight. Bush, among other things, assured reporters that he had full confidence in Maliki and that the prime minister had the full support of the U.S. government, which means he'll probably be deposed and executed within, 6 months. Hey, isn't that what we said about Saddam when Pappy Bush backed him and Rumsfeld gave him weapons? Isn't that what Bush said about Rumsfeld? If I were Maliki tonight, I'd be afraid. I'd be very afraid. Maybe that's why he looks so terrified today. If you saw any of that on television, he's either terrified or extremely pissed. You know, the newspaper of record comes out with a front page above the fold story leaking this, memo written by Stephen Hadley that says essentially Maliki's a freak, a joke, a jerk, doesn't know, couldn't find his ass with both hands, and certainly can't run his country and keep it free of murderous terrorists that were invited in by George W. Bush. You remember, bring him on. So it's a little bit difficult, isn't it, to be a sovereign head of a state, or not a sovereign, but elected head of state, when your client, not your client, but your What's the opposite of client? Your supervisor, your owner, the Bush crime family, treats you like dog smeck in the New York Times. You know, your master. So there stood Maliki today with his master. And you know, if you read body language and facial expressions, and I don't know, I'm sure there's a cultural difference between facial expressions and body language here in the United States and those that show up in the Middle East. But even so, reading Maliki today, just reading his body language and his tone of voice and his expressions, you know he wanted to reach over and murder the person next to him. So yeah, if I were Maliki, I'd be afraid. Oh, and the other only other thing of interest that came out of their meeting in Jordan is that Bush isn't going to leave Iraq. Never. No matter what his pappies, buddies in the Iraq study group say, no matter what the American people say, no matter what anybody says, because God whispers to George, kill George, attack George, occupy. I've never seen anything like this ever. I mean, this is even worse than Kissinger. It's even turning Kissinger's stomach, and my God, you have to have a dead dog full of maggots to turn Kissinger's stomach. It's turning, the establishment in this country, James Baker III and Brent Scowcroft and all these establishment Republican right-wingers, they can't get a handle on this. You know, they want to tell Pappy Bush, look, grab this bastard, take him to the woodshed and paddle him. He needs a spanking. Again. And even Pappy can't do anything. Meanwhile, Mama Bush, Barbara Bush, who sits back with that I just ate my children look on her face, and she couldn't care less. Her children, of course, are just running a rampage in, where are they, Argentina? Jesus, what a family. What a family. What a family. So we have more on Sounds for you tonight, relatively soon in the program, so that those of you who have to go to bed early tonight can do so. This, today is, I don't know, I got things today in the mail and picked stuff off the internet today, and Kathy did, and our chief correspondent sent me a lot of stuff that just makes me sad. Like this is from Kate. I don't know why, Kate. I don't know why this makes me sad, but it does. Mike, I am out in the desert south of Phoenix on the edge of the Barry Goldwater bombing range. 1480 KPHX powers down at sunset, so I stream your program on my landline. I spend hours at a time feeling impotent rage when I rant, just like you, decibels and vocabulary. PNAC has been in the fore of my perspective for years. I try to explain to folks what is happening, how we got into this pile of blank, why our babies are being butchered. I've gotten to a place where I can't stand to be in the same room with folks who are foxed up. I like that. Foxed up. That's a good way. That's a good F word, foxed up, who spend their time and money managing their image. Wish I could call and say hi, but only have one line. Kate, in the desert. I don't know why that's sad. I don't know why that's sad. Sad to me. I'm sad to me. You know, impotent rage. I know what you mean, Kate. That's what you hear on this program every night. Impotent rage. From me, I mean, you know, a lot of people call this program or doing things, you know, to fight it. I just sit here and rage. And then there's this is from Lafayette, California, or as we say here in the Crackerland, Lafayette. Lafayette, California. We have a huge street, not a major artery, but a long, long street that goes through some of the most beautiful neighborhoods in Atlanta. And the name of the street is Ponce de Leon Avenue. Ponce de Leon. But it's pronounced here. If you said, can you tell me where Ponce de Leon Avenue is? People would not pay attention. Here it's pronounced Ponce de Leon. first time, when I first heard that Ponce de Leon, I thought, what the hell? Ponce de Leon, Lafayette, Georgia, in Ponce de Leon.
Well, see, that's why us natives here, rather than sound like the complete cracker crackers that we are,
yeah,
we just say, you go down Ponce.
Ponce.
And that way we're not quite as idiotic sounding.
I'm glad to hear that. This is from Lafayette, California, and of course I'll have to share it with you after the break here because we got a break coming. But I don't know if you saw this. A couple of guys have decided to set up a memorial for the troops killed in Iraq with crosses and Stars of David and you know, religious symbols on a hillside. Kind of like what you see when you see those sad, sad pictures from Arlington National Cemetery. And yes, you can imagine what kind of reception these white crosses have gotten in this California town of Lafayette, California. The other night, what was it? A holiday wreath in the shape and design of a peace symbol. And now it's, and people went nuts. Now it's crosses. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Democrat approach comes down to this. The terrorists win and America loses.
Hey, bring us together, chuckle nuts. Yeah, amen, hallelujah, praise God. So, Lafayette, California, there are hundreds of white crosses planted on what's described as a quiet suburban hillside in honor, or I should say to honor, the memory of troops killed in Iraq, or, depending on your point of view, if you live in Lafayette, the crosses might be there to exploit personal grief for some political reason. It always gets down to this, doesn't it, huh? Either the person doing the peace symbol with the holiday wreath is celebrating peace or is making a political statement. Either people putting crosses and Stars of David on a hill are commemorating the dead, honoring the dead, or they're making a political statement, right? Now, the guy who's doing this is named Jeff Heaton, and along with some other peace group members, he started putting the crosses up in early November. And in his opinion, he's quoted by the Associated Press as saying the effort is a simple tribute. He says, quote, "It seemed like it would be a touching way to make people aware of the true costs of the war," end quote. See, remember, the Bush crime family and a compliant, whorish media in this country, and this is the part that gets me, that the media are still refusing, electronic media, television, is still refusing to allow Americans to understand that we have soldiers and Marines, men and women, who are dying every single day in this godforsaken occupation that Bush has engineered. And they have no trouble telling us, showing us video of explosions, suicide bombings, hundreds of people killed, Iraqis. But the American dead, shh, no. Don't talk about it. No. The only people that are aware, truly aware, of America's dead are the families. So anyway, Jeff Heaton decided to put these crosses up, but it was very offensive to certain people in the community of Lafayette, California. They're on private property. On 400, the 400 crosses that they have up so far are on property owned by a friend of Jeff Heaton's, and the property sits opposite a commuter train station, and is visible from a heavily traveled highway to San Francisco. See, that's the rub. It's out there where, oh, Christ, people can see it! No! We're not supposed to see that! Oh, my God! Lisa Disbrow, a resident of nearby Moraga, California, it says here, who has a son preparing to serve in Iraq, said at a public hearing Monday night, quote, I do not consider this a memorial. I consider it painful and a travesty. Now, the hearing, which was held in Lafayette and drew a crowd of about 200 people, was technically not about the memorial itself, but about an accompanying sign. There's a sign near all these crosses that says, in memory of 2,867 U.S. troops killed in Iraq. Now, the sign is constructed so that the number can be changed. City law in Lafayette, California, limits signs to 4 square feet. Jeff Heaton says his sign is about 80 square feet. The crosses aren't a problem, the officials say, the town officials, because city law exempts memorials and historical markers. But the city council is asking city attorneys for advice on whether the sign ordinance conflicts with freedom of expression, and they'll have an answer in about a month. One of the options would be demanding that the sign be either removed or downsized to 4 square feet. And this is a weird comment. The three-term mayor of Lafayette, Ivor Sampson, who's retiring in December, said, quote, clearly, if this had happened in San Francisco or Berkeley or Oakland, this would be a dog bites man story. Nobody would care. When it happens in a quiet suburban community that is generally more conservative, then it's more like man bites dog, end quote. Now, in that quote, in other words, the people in San Francisco or Berkeley or Oakland are concerned, are upset about all the death in Iraq. Let's just limit it to Americans. All the American death in Iraq. And the people in those three cities would like to do something that commemorates the memory of these people and allows the American public to see occasionally something that reminds us we have a president who sent our soldiers to die for nothing. But apparently that's okay in San Francisco or Berkeley or Oakland. But in Lafayette, it's not. I can't quite get my mind around that one. Maybe you can. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Lord, as empty as a bottle of whiskey in my shaking hand. There's gonna be peace in the valley tomorrow. Cause tonight.
No subliminable messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
26 before the hour. So in Lafayette, California, and by the way, I got an email here. It's Moraga, Mexico. California. Moraga. I said Moraga. Moraga, Mexico. Thanks to our correspondent for clearing that up. So anyway, the mayor out there says if this these crosses, this memorial was put up in San Francisco or Berkeley or Oakland, it'd be no big deal. But here in a quiet suburban community, it is a big deal. I can't understand that. Anyway, the guy who put it up is a contractor. He was a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War, said the attention and support the memorial has received surprised him. His first attempt to erect a memorial, he said, back in 2003, was vandalized. It was on the same property. The second has proved more successful, the second effort here, although one passing motorist did get out of her car and take down the sign. I don't know. That's a very sad story. Not sad to me regarding Jeff Heaton or his friend who put up the crosses, what it commemorates is sad. All the unnecessary death. And you know, we're talking Americans here. The unnecessary death that has been delivered, thanks to George Bush, to almost 3,000 American families now. For nothing. For absolutely nothing. And that for nothing is just my opinion. On ABC News tonight, I happened to catch this. The reporter, and I forget who it was, had a group of five women whose husbands, all young women, whose husbands are serving in the military. And all five of them, if I heard the program right, it was maybe 3.5-minute package. They all support the war. They support the efforts. And what the women said was precisely what you hear from Bush and from Rumsfeld and from the generals, that you know, we have a mission there and we've got to complete the mission. And a lot of several of these women were holding babies whose fathers and their husbands who are in Iraq. And that was sad to me. Some of the husbands are on their second tour. And it's a very fine line for me when I see that. I don't know what side is contempt and what side is sadness. Not contempt for the women, but contempt for what I perceive as the brainwashing they've gotten. These are young women with babies who are saying, yeah, it's okay if my husband is over there for no reason. Well, they don't say that for no reason. That's the part that's sad. It's okay if my husband's over there because he's fighting for something good. And I have to be careful with that, because it would be the height of arrogance for me to disdain what these women are feeling. I can, what they're saying. I can disdain and mock what the leadership of such as it is of this country says. So since I can't adopt any attitude other than a listening attitude, a very Zen attitude, where when I hear women talking like that, I have to draw on everything in me to listen, take note, and let it go. But I'm not adept at that sort of let it flow. So what I'm left with is sadness. That makes sense? I think so. All right, let's get into Maliki and Bush. You want to do this now, Kathy? All right, let's do this now. As everyone knows, they had a little joint press conference today after Maliki gave Bush the finger last night. You know, you're going to write about me in the New York Times like that, or you're going to say those things about me. You know, why is it in the New York Times? You can go screw yourself. I'm not going to have lunch with you. Get out of here, chuckle nuts. But he was back today because Maliki is a good puppet. And knows that if he's not careful, his car will be blown up, or he will be. As a matter of fact, Bush told Maliki after nearly 2.5 hours of talks, quote, "I appreciate the courage you show during these difficult times as you lead your country," end quote. And a little bit later, he said to the press, "He's the right guy for Iraq." And Maliki said, quote, "There is no problem." Oh, my God. All right. Well, here we go. Now, this is Bush making some statements before he went to Q&A. After the leaked memo stating that Bush had no confidence in Maliki. Talk about the pot calling the kettle. Anyway, on the heels of more leaked information that the Iraq Study Group will suggest a withdrawal from Iraq, Bush had this now utterly pointless meeting with this dour, unsmiling, obviously disturbed Maliki in Jordan. Of course not in Iraq. You know, of course not. Bush can't go there anymore. So in this statement, Bush explains his detailed, careful review process of the war strategy in Iraq so that Bush can get the best possible advice from as many sources as possible before totally ignoring them.
My consultations with the Prime Minister and the unity government are a key part of the assessment process. And that's why I appreciate him coming over from Iraq, so that we could have a face-to-face visit.
A coming over?
As part of the review, I've asked our military leaders in the Pentagon and those on the ground in Iraq
to provide their recommendations on the best way forward. Others outside the government are conducting their own review. And I look forward to hearing their recommendations. I want to hear all advice before I make my decisions about adjustments to our strategy and tactics in Iraq to help this government succeed.
And then I'll totally ignore it. Knowing that he is an ignoramus, knowing that he is an utter coward, knowing that he is a bully, knowing that he headed for Alabama as opposed to Vietnam, knowing that he is incompetent, when he talks about he's going to make the decisions, well, after all, he did say he's the decider. There's something inside that part of my esophagus that sticks just above the diaphragm that starts to turn red and hot and burny. You know what I'm saying? So after these totally useless opening remarks were completed, Freak Boy answered some questions, beginning with this one about the leaked memo. The question is, Mr. President, the memo from your national security advisor has raised the possibility that the United States should press Prime Minister Maliki, standing there next to you, to break with Muqtada al-Sadr. Is this in fact your strategy, and did you raise this issue with the Prime Minister this morning?
He and I spent a lot of time talking about the security situation inside of Iraq.
Well, I hope so.
I expressed my concern about the security situation. He expressed his concern about the security situation. After all, one of his most important jobs is to provide security for the Iraqi people.
How's that working out?
He discussed with me his political situation, and I think it is best that he talk to you about the Sadr group or any other group he wants to talk about inside of Iraq.
So the answer to the question is... I expressed my concern about the security situation. He expressed his concern about the security situation. Somebody walked in, I think it was a janitor, and he expressed his concern about the security situation. Then they brought us some water, and the waiter expressed his concern about the security situation. And the king here, what's his name, this young boy king, he expressed his concern about the security situation. Of course, you know the funny part? Here we are in Jordan, which is part of the Hashemite kingdom, and I learned how to say that today. And I'm talking about democracy, and you know, young King Abdullah, is that his name, looking at me and thinking, well, you evil bastard, you want to overthrow my kingdom. You want to ask Bush, could you be a tad more specific? Everyone's talking about the security situation. I mean, this is really the one big problem you have to hash out. Can you share a teensy-weensy part of the American people who are sacrificing their loved ones and are financing your bloody agenda? What you mean by your concern about the security situation? What are you going to do, George? Inquiring minds want to know, right? So the next reporter asked about the possible Hezbollah activity in Iraq, and Bush goes off on a tangent, inadvertently revealing his true motive, which is to remain in Iraq indefinitely, regardless of what any outside advisors recommend. The question is, Mr. Bush, Hezbollah has denied that its forces trained Muqtada al-Sadr forces, but do you have any information if Hezbollah has actually trained the forces of Muqtada al-Sadr?
We talked today about accelerating authority to the prime minister so he can do what the Iraqi people expect him to do.
Muqtada al-Sadr.
And that is bring security to parts of his country that require firm action.
Muqtada, you know.
It's going to... the presence of the United States will be in Iraq so long as the government asks us to be in Iraq.
Muqtada.
It's a sovereign government.
A what?
I believe that there is more training to be done.
Muqtada al-Sadr.
I think the Prime Minister agrees with me.
Muqtada.
So we'll be in Iraq until the job is complete.
But Muqtada al-Sadr.
At the request of a sovereign government elected by the people. I know there's a lot of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit.
Muqtada.
Out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
But. No. My question, Your Honor, was about Muqtada al-Sadr. The funny-looking young guy with the beard on the bottom of his chin, the moon face guy, the man in the moon boy. You know what I'm talking about? Where's the robe? Muqtada.
Muqtada. Al-Sadr. Muqtada.
Speak your mind. Nobody home. It's nice to have some quiet time. There's nobody home. The sign says there's no vacancy. But everything you say to me. My spurs jammed at my feet. Jammed at his feet. I see.
Making the pie higher, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. All right, let's get back to Chuckle Nuts and Maliki, the freely elected leader of Iraq, who loves George Bush and just wants to be friends. Dim Sun here continues to answer the reporter's previous question about al-Sadr training Hezbollah. You know, no answer, but Bush keeps talking, and the way he answers, he talks about al-Qaeda. Now, does anyone really believe the current situation in Iraq is al-Qaeda's responsibility? Doesn't everyone on the entire planet see through this ruse to yet again try to link al-Qaeda to Iraq?
I know that we're providing
Muqtada.
A useful addition to Iraq by chasing down al-Qaeda.
No, Muqtada, al-Sadr.
And by
al-Sadr.
Securing,
Sadr.
By helping this country protect itself from al-Qaeda.
Muqtada.
Al-Qaeda wants a safe haven in Iraq.
They've already got it.
Al-Qaeda made it clear earlier that suicide bombers would increase sectarian violence. That was part of their strategy.
You said bring it on.
One of our goals is to deny a safe haven for al-Qaeda in Iraq.
Muqtada.
And the Maliki government
Maliki
expects us and wants us to provide that vital part of security.
What if Maliki stood there, Chuckle Nuts, and said the Bush government? His name is Maliki. Maliki? What does he say? Al-Qaeda wants a safe haven in Iraq. They never existed in Iraq before Mr. Bush's illegal invasion. Does nobody, everybody understands that. I mean, even right-wing neo-Nazi thug punks in this country understand that. Everyone in the Middle East who attended this press conference, the American media, the Jordanian media, the Iraqi media, the Israeli media, the German media, the French media, they all understood it. But there he stands, this moron. One of our goals is to deny safe haven for al-Qaeda in Iraq. Then why did you create the conditions for al-Qaeda to come in? You always forget to mention, don't you, George, that you are the number one al-Qaeda recruiting tool. You've made that entire region unsafe for democracy. You have, you delusional bastard. I just hate it. I he stands up there. Where does this man exist? So the next reporter asked about this al-Qaeda bat squeeze that Bush is throwing into the mix and what, if any, timetables there are for withdrawal from Iraq, because we now know the Iraq Study Group has suggested a withdrawal. Reporter says, Mr. President, is there a time limit on meeting any of these goals for Prime Minister Maliki or Maliki? Don't want to upstage you, Mr. President. I'll just say it the way you do. And you keep mentioning that the U.S. goal is to fight al-Qaeda. Does that mean, Mr. President, you believe it's up to the Iraqis to stop the sectarian violence and quell the sectarian violence, and this is something you don't want U.S. troops involved in?
What was the first part of your three-part question?
Time limit on meeting goals. Is there a time limit on meeting goals?
As soon as possible. But I'm realistic. Because I understand how tough it is inside of Iraq.
Sure you do.
All timetables mean is that it is a timetable for withdrawal. You kept asking me those questions. All that does is, hold on a second. All that does is set people up for unrealistic expectations as soon as possible. And today we made a step toward as soon as possible by accelerating the transfer of authorities military authorities to the prime minister.
Why is this necessary, dumbhead, if he's a sovereign elected leader like you claim? Transfer of authorities, military authorities to the prime minister? Who? Oh, that's right. We control that. Excuse me. He says, I'm realistic because I understand how tough it is inside of Iraq. Even though I'm too chicken squat to go there, that's why we're here in Jordan. All timetables mean is that it's a timetable for withdrawal. Well, duh. Timetables mean is timetable for withdrawal. You're trying to ask a trick question. What's the part of your trick? Three-part question? What's the first part of your trickery? You tricker? I'm a decider, you tricker, you. You old tricker. What's your name, lady? You tricker. All timetables mean is that it's a timetable for withdrawal. You keep asking me those questions. You keep asking me those questions. I'm going to grab the gun that I know Maliki is carrying in his coat, and I'm going to blow a hole in it. Oops, I'm not allowed to say that. Just kidding. Are we on TV? Oh, my God. When you ask questions about withdrawal, young lady, you set people up for unrealistic expectations like an end to butchery and slaughter and bombing. And it's not going to end as long as I'm the president. And I'm going to make it so freaking miserable over here that the next two presidents of the United States are going to have a hard time disengaging anybody, anywhere, anytime from this rat's nest of blood and gore and busted bodies and death that I've created. Because my job is to protect the American people. Wow. He's insane. He's functioning. A lot of people who are insane can function. But you don't give them the kind of power George Bush has when they are this insane. For the most part, you sedate them. All right, two more, and we'll do those when we come back after the break. Stay with us, all right? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. A couple of quick emails here. This is, and then back to these last two sound bites. Puzzled in Miami writes, Mike, could you please tell me again why the blank impeachment is off the table? Are we just waiting for a few thousand more dead Americans and a few hundred thousand more dead Iraqis? I don't know. Puzzled. And from Mickey, who's writing from Russia, just a little note, I think that something big is about to go down in Iraq. The Israelis have pulled out of the Gaza Strip and enforced a ceasefire. This leads me to think that they fear a resurgence of anti-Israeli sentiment, possibly in Iraq and Syria, and want to preempt it with a PR campaign showing, quote, compassion, end quote. I saw President Bush on TV from Jordan, and it makes me sick when he responded to a load of questions from reporters by saying, quote, I feel like we're fired at from all sides, end quote. I hate that man. I wanted to punch the television. I have a friend in Iraq. His name is Corey. He joined to support his daughter. I hate Bush with such a rage. Mickey. obviously an American writing from Iran. Well, not obviously, but I assume it's American writing from Russia. Hi, Mickey. Back to President Chucklenuts meeting with a rather subdued, chastened, spanked, hangdog
Prime Minister Malachi, Maliki, Maliki.
Aren't these boys all have regular... What am I going to call him? I know, I'll call him Hangdog. Hey, Hangdog, what's the matter, boy? Yeah, I'll call you Piece of Work. How's that? Prime Minister Piece of Work over here. So now Bush rambles on, kind of answering the previous reporter's three-part question. Remember that three-part question? The Bush said, well, that's a three-part question. I can't... About his belief that Al-Qaeda is responsible for the violence in Iraq.
And yes, I talked about making sure that Al-Qaeda doesn't get safe haven in Iraq. Sure, that's an important part of our strategy. But I also have said that the goal is a country that can defend, sustain, and govern itself.
Oh.
And therefore, to the extent that our troops are needed to help do that, we're willing to do that. That's part of the operation in Baghdad. Part of the plan in Baghdad was to prevent killers from taking innocent life.
And,
well, that's killers taking innocent life is, in some cases, sectarian. I happen to view it as criminal, as well as sectarian.
Oh,
I think
God.
Anytime you murder somebody, you're a criminal.
Really?
And I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I received a satisfactory answer about the need to protect innocent life. And that's exactly what our troops have been doing along with the Iraqis.
Okay, to some extent, I guess, along with the occasional torment, torture, taunting, killing, rape, and sexual abuse, I guess our troops have been protecting innocent life. We also have been murdering a lot of innocent life, right? Huh? Isn't that what you just said? I think when you murder somebody, you're a criminal. Oh, Christ, what a brilliant statement. And he says, I believe a just society that holds people to account, believes in rule of law, protects innocent people from murderers, no matter what their political party is. All right, Chucklenuts, what about what their country of origin is? There were five little girls blown into red mist day before yesterday, Chucklenuts, in Anbar province. You know, that's province means like a state, only bigger. And it's where the United States Marine Corps have said it's over in Anbar as far as any kind of American control. Five little girls blown into red mist. You murdering son of a bitch. Does that mean anything to you? Killers taking innocent life, he says. In some cases, it's sectarian. Oh, my God. See, I don't know if you have the same problem I have. I take this... what he says seriously, instead of just, I don't know why we even play this garbage on our program at night, I guess is to point out how desperate this country, our country, the desperate shape we're in with this kind of an idiotic madman in control. Why play this stuff? Why listen to this garbage? I get emails about that sometimes. All right, fine. Finally tonight, Kathy said my headphones because we have to know. I guess so. I guess we have to know. We have to know just how rancid, how corrupt, how dead at the center this freak who talks to God and God tells him to invade countries really is. Jesus.
Finally tonight, a foreign reporter, possibly Jordanian, asks about progress in the war on terror and the war in Iraq. Through a translator, here's the question. Mr. President, in light of the war that the United States is fighting against terror in Iraq, what has been accomplished? What do you expect to be accomplished after a 3-year confrontation? Another question, other people are accusing the United States of bringing terrorism to Iraq. And the proof is that what's going on in Iraq and what's going on in Afghanistan is the proof. And the biggest loser is the Iraqi citizen. Now listen as this insane fool tries yet again to link Iraq to 9/11.
What has been accomplished is the liberation of a country from a tyrant who is now sitting in jail getting a trial that he was unwilling to give thousands of people he murdered himself or had murdered.
He's not waiting.
Secondly, this country has a constitution which is one of the most modern constitutions ever written in the Middle East. This is a government that has been elected by the people.
No.
No question. It's tough. But the reason why terrorists are trying to stop the advance of freedom in Iraq is the very reason why we need to help them. Because they can't stand democracies and they want to impose a hateful vision on as much of the world as possible. It didn't take but 19 people who were trained in Afghanistan to get on airplanes and come and kill over 3,000 citizens in my country. And so you bet it's worth it in Iraq and necessary.
And we're not leaving no matter what anybody says, not till the bodies are stacked all the way up to Jesus. How many statements in here are insane? What has been accomplished is the liberation of a country from a tyrant who is now sitting in jail waiting a trial? You ignorant fool! He's been convicted and sentenced to death! Liberation? Secondly, this country has a constitution. And tell me again what good it is. This country has a constitution. Oh my God! What would be a good analogy to that? We all have appendixes, George, but they don't do anything except occasionally try to kill you. I don't know. That's not a good analogy. They have a constitution. Oh, okay. Which is one of the most modern constitutions ever written in the Middle East. That's the constitution that says that private citizens can't sue corporations and corporations don't have to pay taxes. It's an ideal situation or a constitution for the United States. Right, George? This is a government that has been elected by the people. But the country's in civil war, in chaos. What people? What are you talking about? The reason why terrorists are trying to stop the advance of freedom in Iraq is the very reason why we need them. Because they can't stand democracies. I thought they couldn't stand the fact that we buy houses. And they want to impose a hateful vision. Your vision? What's your vision? Loving? It didn't take but 19 people. Those are your they came from Saudi Arabia. 15 of them were trained in Afghanistan. They may have been trained in Afghanistan, but if they were, the money to run the madrasas came from the Saudi royal family, your business partners, you sick, evil man. And so you bet it's in Iraq and it's worth it and necessary. And I need to go now. No, I don't know why we play these. Kathy says so that people can hear this, so that people understand how degenerate this man is. Okay. With 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the cold. This kind of life makes that violence unthinkable. We'd like to play hockey. Have kids and grow old. Fighters for Texaco. Fighters. I know you're perfectly comfortable with all that's been said. All your charm is offered in your defense. If you're perfectly comfortable. The Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten. 21 past the hour, Gary, listening in on KQKE, The Quake in San Francisco, writes, Mike, did I hear that clip right? Did Bush say that the 19 hijackers were trained in Afghanistan? Hey, they trained in the U.S. How quickly Bush forgets about warnings of Middle Eastern men taking flight lessons, but not too concerned about learning how to land. Perhaps Bush should have read the 9/11 Commission report. Of course, that would require reading, which for Bush would be hard work. Thanks, Gary. What does he mean when he says they were trained in Afghanistan? Maybe at some point they attended a madrasa. I don't know if they have to go all the way to Afghanistan or Pakistan or one of the other stands to train in a madrasa, in a school for young males to teach them about radical Islam as opposed to unradical Islam. But they got their training on how to fly into buildings right here, George. Of course, don't bring that up because it puts the spotlight on the incompetency of your administration, the murderous incompetency, or something else. That's assuming that the official story is the official story. As far as Afghanistan, this is from the Independent of the UK. You might not want to hear this, so I'll give you 5 seconds. It's kind of a grim story. And I'm not trying to trick you into listening. I mean it, but here it is. This is written by Kim Sengupta for the Independent newspaper of the United Kingdom. This is from yesterday. The gunman came at night to drag Muhammad Halim away from his home in front of his crying children and his wife begging for mercy. This 46-year-old school teacher tried to reassure his family that he would return safely, but his life was over. He was partly disemboweled and then torn apart with his arms and legs tied to motorbikes. His remains put on display as a warning to others against defying Taliban orders to stop educating girls. Now, remember what Bush said yesterday in one of his half-assed speeches about 1 million girls are going to school in Afghanistan. Remember what your humble servant here said. I said, where in the hell did he get that figure? Disemboweled, partly, and then arms and legs tied to 4 motorbikes, kind of like we used to do in the West, I guess, with horses. Only so often it didn't work, but I guess it works with motorbikes. And then he was separated from his torso. Mr. Halim, the article says, was one of 4 teachers killed in rapid succession by the Islamists at Ghazni, a strategic point on the routes from Kabul to the south and east, which has become the scene of fierce clashes between the Taliban and U.S. and Afghan forces. Yeah, Afghan forces. Yeah, kind of like Iraqi forces, right? The day we arrived, the reporter writes, an Afghan policeman and 8 insurgents died during an ambush in an outlying village. Rockets were found, primed to be fired into Ghazni City during a visit by the American ambassador a few days previously. But, as in the rest of Afghanistan, it is civilians who are bearing the brunt of this conflict. At the village of Karabagh, the family of Mr. Halim are distraught and terrified. His cousin, Ahmed Ghul, shook his head, quote, they killed him like an animal. No, we do not kill animals like that. It would be haram. They took away a father and a husband. They had no pity. We are all very worried. Please go now. You see those men standing over there? They are watching. It is dangerous for you and for us, end quote. Fatima Mushtaq, the director of education in Ghazni, has had repeated death threats. The so-called notorious night letters. Her gender, as well as her refusal to send girls home from school, has made her a particular source of hatred for Islamist zealots. She says, quote, I think they killed him that way to frighten us. Otherwise, why make a man suffer so much? Muhammad Halim and his family were good friends of ours. And we are very, very upset by what has happened. He came to me when the threats first began and asked what he should do. I told him to move somewhere safe. I think he was trying to arrange that when they came and took him.
yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. I've just got one last thing here, and then let's take some phone calls. 800-989-1480. Dennis Prager is another one of these right-wing fruitcakes on talk radio. I have done, a couple of times with this moron, some of the left-right back-and-forth horse droppings that the networks seem to love to put on. Here's the liberal, and here's the conservative. Now, go for it, boys. Until it really gets bad, and then they get all nervous. All the usually female anchors get all nervous. But Prager, I've been on with Prager before, and he really is a jackass. I mean, just a complete imbecile. I that's pretty much all I can say. He's just another one of these right-wing talk show hosts who is completely out of touch with any kind of reality. He's told a lie, came up with a whole controversy to attack the first Muslim congressman. This is from Think Progress, and it says right-wing radio host Dennis Prager wrote a column earlier this week claiming that Representative-elect Keith Ellison, who's a Democrat from Minnesota, the first Muslim elected to Congress, had, quote, announced that he will not take his oath of office on the Bible, but on the Bible of Islam, the Quran, end quote. Prager claimed this, quote, act undermines American civilization, end quote, and compared it to being sworn in with a copy of Hitler's Mein Kampf. Bloggers on the left and right have torn apart Prager's argument on constitutional grounds, but Prager's column is based on one other glaring error. The swearing-in ceremony for the House of Representatives never includes a religious book. The office of the House clerk confirmed to Think Progress that the swearing-in ceremony consists only of the members raising the right hand and swearing to uphold the Constitution. The spokesperson for the office of the House clerk said neither the Christian Bible nor any other religious text had ever been used in an official capacity during the ceremony. Occasionally, members pose for symbolic photo ops after the swearing-in with their hand on a Bible. Now, this is sent to me by Linda and Craig in Boone, North Carolina. And they add post-scripturally, don't you just want to ship all these right-wing, mindless, spineless, lying radio whales off to a large island somewhere so they can all set up their own little fascistic state? Yeah. Now, do you suppose Prager will come on the air and say, I made a mistake, like you hear on this program? Jesus, how many times do we say, made a mistake? Prager is a hater. He wants people to hate. He wants death and destruction, as long as it's not his or any member of his family. And I think, isn't Prager, Prager's got three or four sons that are draft age, if there was a draft. Isn't he the one with, Kathy, with the boys who, if Prager is such a believer in what's going on in Iraq, shouldn't they be over there? What a piglet. There's only one pig, and that's Limbaugh. He has lots of imitators, but none of them ever qualified to be pig. This is another piglet. And then this is from Jeff in Pittsburgh, California. Mike, I'm glad to hear you back on the air tonight. I feared that your profane rant last night may have gotten your plug pulled, and I'm glad to hear otherwise. It wasn't really profane, was it, Kathy? I mean, I said three or four cuss words. I was very, very angry. Nothing that is not tolerated by FCC rules and regs. I've said before, I do try to not use profanity because, like most people, I see the use of curse words or profanity as a sign of intellectual laziness. Yeah, but on the other hand, you know, calling somebody a son of a bitch is a lot more effective and powerful than calling them a bad man, I think. You know, of course, I was raised in a white working class ghetto, so what do I know? Anyway, Jeff writes, glad to hear you back on the air tonight. I feared that your profane rant last night may have gotten your plug pulled, and glad to hear otherwise. In my town of Pittsburgh, California, is about 45 minutes from Lafayette. That's where they have the crosses out. It is a heavily wooded community, which is generally upscale. A few shacks here and there, you know, peasants' quarters, but mostly old money. There's another community nearby known as Blackhawk. My single-story, four-bedroom home could fit inside some of the homes in this area. To give you an idea of the so-called culture in Blackhawk, a co-worker of mine was driving into the neighborhood to hook up a stereo purchased from the electronics store we worked at by one of the morons who lives out here. They know all about how to swindle enough money to purchase one of these monstrous homes, but they don't have enough brains to hook up a couple of speakers. Naturally, they expect you to do it for free. As he was driving along, a local policeman was driving the opposite way. He's talking about his friend. The policeman stared as the two cars passed. The cop turned his car around and pulled my friend over. My friend is black. Comprende, Mike? Sure, I comprende, Jeff. You ought to be glad you don't live in Atlanta. Here in Atlanta, we shoot black folks, especially if they're 92 years old. You know, they've revised now. The woman that the cops shot dead the other night is only 88, or was only 88. She's now dead. Anyway, thanks for writing, Jeff. I appreciate it. Okay, phone calls. Let's really do some talk radio here. You want to? Bill is calling from Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Mike. Your emailer had me thinking. There are those out there that are foxed up on drudge. Then you got them foxed up, so to speak, on drugs.
Yeah.
The crystal meth thing is going to make the heroin epidemic of our youth look like.
Oh, it's awful. This meth, this crystal meth thing, or speed, or whatever the hell it is.
And then you got them so fucked up, they're too stupid to tie their shoes, like George. Maybe the rapture writes right. Maybe they're right. Maybe it's bring on the asteroid that looks like Howdy Doody time, you know? I mean, how do we win? How do we win if they control the message, Mike?
Well, you know, that saying, and I don't know where it came from, there are four boxes that you should use in the defense of liberty, and you use them in this order. Soap, ballot, jury, ammo.
Ammo.
That's all I can say. I mean, I don't know. If those of us on the left are serious about the things we talk about, if the day comes, then the day comes.
But
you know,
the great enemy, Mike, through all of this, through all this double fight, so to speak, is ignorance. Is those people out there that just plain flat out do not know. I drive around Phoenix, a right-wing town, sure to boot, with a impeach Bush Cheney sign on my car, on my motorcycle, wherever I go, on my back, I carry a sign.
Yeah.
And when I'm engaged, I find people that know nothing. The people that engage me, the people that want to run me off the road because I've got a sign.
Yeah, I find the same thing. Yeah.
They know nothing. I say to them, who is Prescott Bush?
Huh? Yeah. Isn't that a town in Arizona?
Yeah, right. It's a nice town in Arizona. You should visit. Yeah. Speaking of which, I'm still willing to take up that collection to get you here, but not tonight. I think it's going to snow. It's
oh, my
cold.
God.
It's cold down here.
Yeah, we don't need snow. We don't need snow. All right, thanks. Thanks for checking in, Bill.
Love you, baby.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care. All foxed up. I like that. We're going to use that. Thanks to our, who is it in the desert? Linda? No. I've got her email in here. Who wrote that? All foxed up. You know, like Fox Network. Well, I guess everybody gets that. Kathy's looking at me. We get it, Mike. I don't have any political bumper stickers on my car. I do have a gun rack in the back of my pickup truck, and I've said before that occasionally, just for the sheer hell of it, I'll put I've got a 12 gauge and I've got a 30 caliber deer rifle. Well, it's not really a deer rifle, just 30 caliber. It's a 30 .06. But I'll put the shotgun up there every once in a while, especially when we drive into the North Georgia Mountains. I mean, really into the North Georgia Mountains. And a lot of people wave. You know, that friendly kind of wave that that you only see, well, I don't know, maybe you don't only see it in the South, but it's very prevalent in the South. But they see that gun rack, and it's like, oh, well, hell, he must be one of us. I know he ain't no damn liberal if he's got that big old gun rack back there. And look, hell, look at that. Damn, that's a 30, that's a Winchester. Look at that gun that boy's got. Yeah. We had a bumper sticker before we traded that disgusting little car we had. What did it say? War is not the answer. That's all it said. War is not the answer. You know, from the Friends Service Committee, I think American Friends Service Committee put those out. And we had, well, war is not the answer. That's all. And we used to get the finger every once in a while. So I didn't have it on the pickup truck. I should have had it on the pickup truck with the gun rack. Oh, never mind. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Muller. We got three open lines here. Come on, y'all. 800-989-1480.
Listen, we've never been stayed, of course.
It's about 10 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Mike. You know, I'm really starting to feel sorry for Keith Ellison. I mean, as you've said, he's the first Muslim congressman, and he's an African-American, which means that he's going to be taking a lot of flack from the right wing on a lot of fronts. And I know you said the right-wing talk radio guy's name.
Dennis Prager. See, he gets a twofer there. Not only does he get to display his contempt for Muslims, but he also gets to display his contempt for black folk.
Well, this isn't the first time Ellison has taken this kind of crap from a right wing. Glenn Beck on November 14th, he said, "Sir, prove to me that you're not working for enemies."
Oh, I remember. Yeah.
I mean, this is just ridiculous for me, anyway. I mean, I followed his campaign. I know I live in Texas, but I follow the noticeable campaigns, and I mean, the first Muslim in Congress, that's a pretty big deal, especially considering the racist country we live in. And for him to be taking all this garbage from the right wing, all this, all these lies and stuff, which, I mean, the ones you mentioned are kind of humorous and sad at the same time, but I mean, it must be hard for him to have to deal with all these right-wingers. He's a Democrat, he's black, and he's Muslim. This doesn't bode well with the neo-Nazis.
No, and what still amazes me, because I guess I'm so old that I remember when managing editors, whether they were at TV stations, radio stations, or newspapers or magazines, still had a sense of fair play, of putting people on the air or allowing people to write for their publications or putting people in front of a camera who would at least speak the truth, no matter what political point of view it came from. It could be right-wing truth, left-wing truth, whatever. They would still speak the truth. And that day is gone. Now, you know, this little Glenn Beck character and Dennis Prager, these people, and Limbaugh's another example, and Hannity, they lie. They come on the air and they tell lies that are inflammable.
I guess one could say that's part of their job description, though.
But that could be, and if it is, that's my point. Like Bart Kopp is fond of saying, he will preface a sentence by saying, "I'm so old, I remember blank, 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 blank." Well, I'm saying the same thing. I'm so old that I can remember when at least whatever your point of view was, your presenting of facts had to be facts, that not presenting lies and distortions and half-truths and deliberate misinformation and disinformation. And the person who started that in media to a tremendous degree was Limbaugh. Most of what Limbaugh has said over the course of his miserable radio career has been a lie. And it's not presented as, this is my opinion. You know, when somebody presents an opinion, if they want to lie, you know. But to present it as fact to these dunderheads who listen to him, or who listen to Prager, or who listen to Beck, or who listen to Hannity, or the rest of these people, that's the part that's just, it's astonishing to me, Matthew.
Yeah.
Oh,
well. It's good entertainment, just seeing, okay, that's a lie. Okay, and these people are actually buying it.
I know. All right, listen, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, Matthew. Take care.
You keep it lit.
Oh, yeah. The only thing that, or not the only thing, but the major thing that bothers me about these lying bastards is the fact that so many people listening will take it as fact. I've discovered, and I'm sure you've discovered, that we are a nation of sheep. We really are. We're a nation of sheep, and for the most part, I'm not talking about you. I'm damn sure not talking about me. But we're a nation of sheep, and when a loudmouth, blithering idiot who plays right into our bigotries and prejudices has a microphone and 300 radio stations, well, that means he's got to be credible, right? When he says things on the air and you hear commercials come from Ford Motor or McDonald's Corporation or General Electric or what have you, well, that's got to be credible because those are wonderful American corporations, right? Right? It's beyond belief. Oh, well. AJ, who is calling from the Music Factory in New York. Hey, AJ.
Good evening, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine, AJ. How are you?
Good. I go by the Music Factory. That's usually what I use as my handle. Two favors I'd like you to do for me. First, I want to start by telling you that you were let go from Air America, and I went into shock. I couldn't speak for 3 days.
Yeah, well, me too.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay?
Thank
I want
you
to do me two favors if you can.
I'll try.
I ask as politely as I can.
All right.
First, please don't apologize anymore for your language. Let me tell you why I say this, because you color within the lines that you've been given. Nothing could be more profane than what's going on in this country. Nothing that comes out of your mouth could be more profane. We need you to describe it for us. If we didn't want you to describe it for us and you to comment on it, we would be tuning in to other milder shows. So please, Mike, don't get yourself knocked off the air, but whatever the FCC lets you say, say it and say it loud. I can't stand it when you apologize.
Okay. I guess, again, I'll have to refer to my age. I'm so old that I remember when you didn't even say damn on the radio.
I'm old enough to remember Eric Severide, Edwin Newman, and Walter Cronkite.
Okay.
That time has passed.
Well, you're almost
the gloves have come off.
You're almost as old as I am.
And we didn't take them off.
All right, AJ, can you hold on?
I can.
All right, hang on. I'll come back to you after the break because I got a break here, and you've only been talking for a minute 30, and that's not enough to get it all said. So, all right, stick around, Truth Seekers. If you're on hold, we're going to get you tonight. We are going to get you tonight. This is not one of those nights where I say call in and I leave you hanging for an hour and a half. Okay? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network.
decided that we're really not to blame for the love that's deep inside us now. It's still the same. And the sound we make together is the music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down.
Welcome back, 7 past the hour. It happens every night when we start the third hour and Kathy plays that Moody Blues music, and I just want to pour a great big old glass of wine and kick back and listen to, to our children's children's children, Seventh Sojourn, On the Threshold of a Dream. What else? Those first seven albums that they did. Can't think right now. But anyway, we're talking with AJ, the Music Factory from New York. All right, where were we, AJ? Where's AJ?
The second part of my favor, really two sides of the same coin.
Okay.
I've heard on and off as I've listened to your program for the last two or three years, people complaining about the, you know, too much moron sounds. Going back to the same theme that I was covering before the break, we can't get too much of this. This regime needs to be taken down, and it needs to, one of the things that we need to do is hear it again and again and again, his incompetence, their malevolence, on and on. We cannot take a break from this. I believe that one of the reasons we won the last election narrowly is because of this barrage that has been going on for the last couple of years, that the liberal voices have finally spoken up.
Mm-hmm.
And we need people like you, and I'm not trying to throw flowers your way. This is your job. If you want to talk about what my job is and how well I do it, I'm willing to do that too. But now we're talking about your job, and your job is to shoot the cannons every single night. Don't hold back. Don't apologize. I tell you, I walked around for a solid week after you were let go from Air America. I could not speak. I was trying to figure out what I could do. I sent you a couple of emails that were fairly expressive.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you got them, but I'm sure you got a million of them. But anyway, Mike, I'll call you again about various. I've been wanting to call you for a long time, but please let me express my gratitude, my thanks. And please, either you get fired or you don't. But if you don't.
that's true.
If you don't. Please, Mike, let me express it as the Music Factory would. Fortissimo, all the way.
Fortissimo, all the way. All right. Thanks, AJ.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Take care. I appreciate it. Take care. Yeah, that is the reason that Kathy gives me these sound bites. Well, yeah, go ahead. Open your mic. What?
Yeah, I want to appreciate that from AJ, because one thing that, you know, I'm responsible, America. If you want to look to someone to blame for all the Bush sound,
or that, to applaud,
however you want to put it, that's me. I sit there and I think, my God, I have just ruined my beautiful mind with so much inundation of crap from Limbaugh and Bush and Condi and Kissinger and Cheney and Rummy and, oh my God, Ari Fleischer, Scott
McClellan,
Simple Scotty, and now Tony Foxy the Snowman. I mean, it's just like a rat's nest, and I do it for you. I do it because there are people out there who don't listen every night, and there are people who only catch it once in a while. And if America doesn't hear it, they're not going to hear it on ABC, CBS, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, any of the alphabet networks. They've got to hear it somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. And as AJ points out, there it's not just on our program. When we worked at Air America, Sam did this. Randy did it.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a whole bunch of people.
We just probably did more of it.
Well, we do. We do.
And we did it starting with IE America before there was Air America.
But that was, I just wanted to get that out, and I'm glad you said what you said, Kathy, because I couldn't do it. I mean, I could not sit here as Kathy does. She records stuff all day long on the equipment. Whether it comes over CNN's pipeline or comes from press briefings or whatever. And then at some point in the afternoon, usually I take Molly after a nap, and we go to the playground. And Kathy gets in here and hunkers down for a couple hours going through this stuff and coming up with a sound that she thinks is necessary for people to hear. And that's, you know, of course, that's why they pay you $10 an hour.
Exactly. And one other thing to that, and this is, I don't know why this is important to me, but I feel like I've got this digital record. I have.
Oh, you've got, you've got more stuff.
This is not an exaggeration. Oh, my God. I have 54 mini discs.
Loaded.
Loaded with what are called actualities of sound clips over the past 5 years.
Is this for Molly when
she
goes?
6 years. Up? I don't know what it's for, but I mean, and I have a paper trail with it. I have a verified ballots. I have a backup trail of transcripts of everything. And I don't know why I feel that's important, but it's almost like my own little personal historical record that something is out there in existence that can't be flushed down the memory hole. Now, as soon as I say that, you know, I can hear. You know, coming down to our little studio or something. It's like I shouldn't say anything. It's in a vault. It's in a
Well, we
vault.
had a mini disc wiped out last night when the power went off.
No, it was music.
Oh, that
thank,
was just
thank
music,
God it was only music. No, I've got backups of all my data. But yeah, I just wanted to get that out there. And I mean, I am suffering for you, America. I have not missed. I bet you, I have not missed more than two speeches that Shrub has given in 8 years.
Six years.
Yeah. Oh God, it seems like 20 that I have heard.
Well, that's true. And I remember just as a little anecdotal nonsense here before I go back to the phones. When Kathy first came to work with me, because the producer I had copped an attitude and split, and we were working for IE America, and our boss at the time said, "No, we don't want to hire your wife because we don't want to see your marriage disintegrate. You know, you can't do this kind of high pressure business with a spouse. It won't work." And we insisted because my point was simply nobody knows my attitude or my point of view better than the person I'm married to, Jesus. But Cliff, who was our boss at IE America, was right. I mean, we've had some king hell fights, Kathy and me. I mean, just some real barn burners. Over stuff about the program, but we usually reconcile it. And of course, now that we have a kid, you don't let your child see that kind of upset. But it's come, I think, because of the intense anger and fear and contempt and rage that we both feel. I mean, we're parents of a 2-year-old, for Christ's sake, and to know that she has to deal with this stuff, to know that that the country literally is, our institutions are hanging in balance from this collection of freaks, and it does put a lot of pressure. I'm not saying anything here other than just kind of expanding on what AJ said, blah blah blah. Just a little insight into us. You know, we do these things to get the word out. God knows we don't make that much money doing this. I mean I'm not complaining. We certainly make a living. The bills are paid. The mortgage is paid. But it's just to do it. You know, I'm reminded of Peter Werbe, our friend in Detroit, who used to substitute for me a lot on Air America, and will probably be filling in for me on this network. And Peter has been an activist for progressive causes, anti-war causes, pro-union causes, feminist causes, racial justice causes. I saw a picture of Peter when he was 17 years old, and Peter's my age now. Just busting ass and taking names in Detroit, which has, you know, a little bit more of a progressive city than, say, Atlanta. But Peter's been out there fighting for, for 50 years, just busting his ass. And every time he substitutes for me, I think, you know, very few people know of Peter's history. I mean, this guy in the anti-war movement, no matter what the war was, in the peace movement, in the social justice movement, you know, Peter Werbe has a track record that would make me look like a dilettante. And I don't think very many people understand the effort that sometimes goes into progressive broadcasting. Oh, well, that's enough of that. I'm glad we had a chance to clear that off, folks. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Obviously disappointed with the outcome of the election. Actually, I thought we were going to do fine. Just what I know. It was a thumping.
A thumping, halfwit. One more email here, then back to your calls. This is from Abby. Abby writes, clearly, this is about the Taliban horror, that little story that I shared with you from the Guardian of the UK. Clearly, as illustrated by your story of the man who was brutally murdered for teaching girls, the Taliban is a bunch of murderous thugs who use their particular brand of fundamentalist religion to terrorize and dominate the Afghans. Afghan women are also committing suicide to escape the lives they are being forced to lead. Sam Harris has forcefully articulated the opinion that the liberals in this country won't recognize that some Islamic religious extremists are dangerous totalitarians. What do you think? I have great contempt for all religious fundamentalism, regardless of the religion. Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, I don't care what the religion is. Usually the fundamentalist branch is sick, psychotic, murderous, xenophobic, will stop at nothing to force their religion down your throat, even to the extent of condemning your, in their opinion, immortal soul to eternal damnation for not believing the way they believe. So I've been reading a lot about some of the people who are proponents right now of atheism, a resurgence of, you know, we're tired of being kicked around and so on and so on and so on. And I fully understand that there's a difference between being atheistic and being spiritual or non-spiritual or whatever. But to me, religion is an enterprise that was set up for control, for conquest, for domination. And it's based on, again, my opinion only, based on utter and absolute fear and ignorance and superstition. Now, I'm not supposed to say it that way because there are a lot of people who are religious, who truly believe in the goodness of what they're doing, in the social justice of what they're doing, in the love of what they're doing, in the peace and harmony of what they're doing. And to those people, the only thing I can say is you are interpreting your religion in a very blessed, if you'll pardon that expression, way, and more power to you. But as far as I can read from history, you are in an incredible minority. Religion has not been about, the application of religion has not been about taking care of our brothers and sisters. It's not been about the lessons of Jesus or the Buddha or some of the other avatars in religion. It's not been about that. It's been about murder and mayhem and genocide. What was this thing? Where's this thing? Somebody sent me this right before the program. Oh, here it is. Cool Andrew sent this to me. Richard Dawkins quote. Now, Dawkins, of course, has a book out right now about the God delusion and so on and so forth, and he's catching flack for it. And I understand that, you know, belief in a supreme being and a belief in that sort of thing is so absolutely necessary for some folks. Okay, fine. But Dawkins, here's the Dawkins quote. The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction. Jealous and proud of it, a petty, unjust, unforgiving control freak, a vindictive, bloodthirsty, ethnic cleanser, a misogynistic, homophobic, racist, infanticidal, genocidal, psilocidal, megalomaniacal, sadomasochistic, capriciously malevolent bully.
Whoa! That's your boy Richard Dawkins, one of Kathy's favorite biologists. He is a biologist, right? That's the, yeah. Kathy got turned on to the blind watchman back in school in Chicago. But anyway, whew, that's quite a quote. All right, back to the phone calls. I'm sorry for the delay here. Bill is calling from Cleveland, Ohio. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Hey, it's good to talk with you again.
My pleasure.
I talked with you the night before the elections, and I was working the booth.
Oh, yeah, 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 I remember.
Yeah, what an experience. Wonderful. People came without legs and wheelchairs and just from all walks of life. Smelly out of the ditches and union workers galore. It was just, it was amazing.
Determined to put some Democrats in office in Ohio.
Yeah, it reminded me of Waking the Sleeping Dragon.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
there
that,
you go.
What's his name? The Japanese leader talked about after Pearl Harbor.
Hey, can you, yeah, the Sleeping Dragon, of course, being us. I think it was that Tojo who said that? Yamamoto.
Yamamoto. Yeah.
Hey, hold on. Hold on a second, sure. Bill. I got to do a break here. We'll come back and get you on the other side of the break. And stick around. Daniel, Alice, Dave, and Bruce, as well as Bill, we'll pick up your calls as soon as we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. All right, back to your phone calls. Bill was holding on for us. Bill, go ahead. Pick it up for you, wherever you dropped it.
Yeah, Mike, we were talking about waking up the sleeping dragon.
Yes.
Remember Nixon talked about the silent majority back in his days?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're finding out that the silent majority is getting fed up with their monkey business.
I hope so. Democrats, normal people, liberals, progressives in this country made a huge error in 1980 when they bought into the Ronald Reagan, Reagan-Democrat thing. Ronald Reagan was a very pretty man. He was very telegenic. He'd been in our homes since the mid-50s on television. He'd been in our theaters since the mid-40s. So many working class Americans bought into the lies of the Republican Party as put out there by the pretty boy, Ronald Reagan, and we're still paying for it. So I hope you're right. I hope there has been what they call a sea change. Never completely understood that term. I guess it means like the tide's turning. But a sea change in how Americans look at the differences between the Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, you know, something I found interesting, Walmart stock has dropped for the first time in, not their stock, but their income.
Yeah. Well, their stock price went down, I think, also.
And I wonder if people aren't getting fed up with all this religious nonsense and this war on Christmas baloney, which they're getting involved in. You know, we had a Lawson's chain here in Ohio back in the 70s, mm-hmm. and they got heavily involved with these Christian fundamentalists, and they refused to sell, Hustler magazines and Playgirl and Playboy and whatnot. And it ended up people quit shopping there, and they were closed within 2 years. They all went out of business. People were just fed up with their nonsense.
Yeah, Walmart has been a real disappointment for me. I remember 30 years ago believing Walmart. It was a company that bought American-made products.
Remember that?
Oh, sure.
The flag on it.
If it's not American-made, we won't sell it.
Right.
Oh, my God. Boy, has that changed. All right, let me move on. I appreciate you checking in, Bill. Thanks a lot. Take care, okay? Daniel is calling from Cotati, California. Is that right?
Cotati, California.
Cotati. Hey, how you doing, Daniel?
Pretty good. How about you?
Fair to partly cloudy.
I just want to say, I was so sad, so pissed off when they kicked you off on Air America.
Yeah, me too.
Very depressing, and like, I thought they were going to steal the election and everything, you know?
Uh-huh.
One of the things, you know, there's so much to say, and this is real life, and we're in so much danger for everything, our lives there, the world, the earth, every single human being, every creature. We're at risk. Our lives are in danger.
Isn't that the truth? It really is the truth. And the thing is, we can't think about that 24/7 or we'll go insane. That's why people like Kathy and me and millions of other people in this country have a child or have a kid or other people fall in love or other people open up a small business or other people, you know, we keep doing those things that defy all this this crappy global negativity where it concerns the environment, where it concerns global warming, where it concerns political meltdowns and wars and rumors of wars. There's an element of human consciousness that says, no, by God, no, I'm not going to give in to the garbage. I'm going to keep fighting.
I'm into that.
Yeah, me too.
You know, one thing that upsets me, I'll be honest with you. I grew up on KPFA Pacific Radio out of Berkeley, California.
Right.
You know, that spoils you if you grew up with that kind of stuff.
That's
one thing that I'm really upset about with the Quake is that they actually preempt your show for basketball or football. Maybe every, you know, that really stinks, and that upsets me.
No. Wait,
you know what I mean? It's like I turn you on.
All right, wait. Here,
there's no Mike Malloy.
Let me say this.
Oh, it's the football or basketball.
I wish.
I want to listen to you. You know.
I wish every station that ever carried our program would always carry the program, but that's not the way the demographics of an audience works.
Oh, come on! This is the Bay Area, you know.
No, it doesn't matter. What you're saying? There are no sports fans in the Bay Area?
But it's the Quake. It's progressive, you know.
Well,
it's talk radio. It's like for the.
But there's still,
you know,
there are progressive sports fans. What are you? Come on! You know that, Daniel. There are people in the progressive community. Hell, I'm one.
Yeah,
I you know, professional sports.
It's Mike Malloy, you know what I mean?
Professional sports kind of makes me sick, but
now
I still.
Now you're being politically correct. Now,
but I still, but I still like to watch a Sunday afternoon football game, NFL. I still like to watch a World Series, and you're going to find that no matter what market we're in, I don't care what the market is. If there's professional sports,
and
it's on when we're on. We're going to be preempted. That's an attempt by the station to make sure, no matter what the station is, to make sure that the entire market is being served, not just radical hippies like you and me.
Well, you know. Well, peace, man.
All right, Daniel.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. Take care. Alice is calling from Arkansas. Hey, Alice.
Hey. See, if you lived in a rural area, then your only choice is to stream so you don't get preempted.
Well, that's true, too. I don't suppose y'all don't have any professional sports teams in nowhere Arkansas, right?
Not hardly.
Right, I hear you.
Listen, you know that Dawkins quote?
Yeah.
About God?
Yes.
That sounds an awful lot like Dick Cheney, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
It was really freaky. And that reminded me that actually organized religion is really what keeps the poor from murdering the rich.
You know, you're absolutely correct. I believe, and again, Diderot, I think it was Diderot who said that humankind will not be free until the last king is strangled
yes.
with the entrails of the last priest.
Yes.
And I just happen to tend to agree with that.
Yeah. Organized religion is a terrible, dangerous thing.
It is extremely dangerous. Somebody said the other day, I read this, well, if religion is so bad, look at the 20th century where non-religious activities around the globe resulted in tens upon tens of millions of people dying. And arguably the 20th century was our bloodiest century in the history of the human race, or at least recorded history. And my answer to that is simply, well, if it was the bloodiest and if religion did not have a hand in those wars, where in the hell was religion in stopping them?
Right, and not only that, but Hitler marched under the flag of religion.
Well, he used, when he wrote Mein Kampf, there's an awful lot of quotations about Christianity. And
right.
Now I know that modern historians have tried to spin him as kind of a Germanic pagan, but he was the product of a Christian nation. So much of what he said was based on Christian theology. mm-hmm. his Christian dogma, I should say. And his hatred of the Jews, I'm sure psychiatrists or psychologists can figure that out, but I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that he was one of those proponents of the Jews or the Christ killers. So,
well,
no, I have no respect for organized religion. Individual faith, individual spirituality,
yes,
I celebrate it.
Yes.
But organized religion,
no,
to hell with
it.
Yeah,
I agree. And what I called about, actually, was I've been for months and months and months just chewing over this support the troops, support the troops, support the troops.
It's a hard one, isn't it?
Well, where I came to was we need to stop supporting the troops, and we need to start to rescue them. Because they are in danger, not only in physical danger, but they're in danger for their immortal souls, if you will. They are in a situation where the only choice they have is to disintegrate into the same barbarism that everybody does in a situation like that. And they need to be rescued. They need to be rescued from Iraq, and they need to be rescued from Rumsfeld, and they need to be rescued from this administration. And they need to be brought back home.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I say rescue the troops.
That's a good way to that also would make a great bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Rescue the troops.
Don't
support them, rescue them.
Stickers that say rescue the troops.
There you go. All right.
And I want to thank you, and I especially want to thank Kathy, because I don't have a TV, so I don't get to see and listen to all of the crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. And the only time I hear it is on your show.
Okay. Well,
you are the scream I suppress all day.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Alice.
Bye.
All right. Take care. Take care, Alice. One of the difficult aspects of getting older is you get a thought in your mind you want to say it, and it gets away. I was just thinking of something, Kathy, and. Come on, you usually can read my mind. What was I just thinking of?
Almost time for cheese sandwich.
No, it's not that. Oh, well, back to the phone calls. Dave is calling from New Jersey. Dave, welcome to the program. Hey,
hello.
Dave.
Actually, it's D.
Oh, D?
Yeah, like the letter.
All right, hi, D.
Mike, I sent you something earlier about Kissinger being asked to be a political advisor to the Vatican.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I heard Bob Kincaid talking about it tonight, and I said, you've got to be kidding. And sure enough, I Googled it, and it's in the Catholic Register is where I found it.
The Nazi Pope wants a Jewish Henry Kissinger to be his political advisor.
Exactly.
You know, there is some kind of...
What is this religion and politics? This is insanity. I lived through Reagan and the Falwells, and it's like, okay, we get this jackass out, excuse me, and, you know, this will all go away. And then it comes back. I sympathize with you and Kathy. I grew up in the South, Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, you can't get more Southern than Mississippi.
That's true.
And I escaped from there and made it to New Orleans and then got blown to New Jersey.
Right.
So, like I said, I listen to you all the time, and I thought I was going to go through withdrawals when y'all weren't on. And, I mean, because you, like the guy was saying earlier, you and Kathy and Randy and Sam, you don't know how much you reach out and give people like me, and I'm sure millions of others, so much hope. And, I mean, like I said, I was struggling and waiting for the election. You know, if we get it to the election, that's what everybody was saying. We're going to get to the election.
Yeah,
and once
yeah.
we get there,
yeah.
you know, everything's going to change. You know, the sun is going to rise. You
hey,
know,
hold on a second, D.
Sure.
Hold on just a second. Take it away, Kathy. We'll be right back. 9 before the hour, thanks to our Army of One in Phoenix, Ian Huff, who engineered the program and co-produced, also answered your telephone calls. Thanks, Ian. Our senior correspondent is Chris in Minnesota. Mark Marshall at markmarshall.com handles the website, mikemalloy.com. Thanks to the militant moderators at mikemalloy.com on the message board. Ben Birch, White Rose Society, archives the program and podcasting and downloads of the Malloy Show now available at novamradio.com. Back to Dee in New Jersey. All right, Dee, where were we?
I'm not really sure.
Well,
well, really, Mike, the reason why I called is, like I said, I moved here from New Orleans. Luckily, I got out before the storm hit. I was one of the lucky ones. But I was just down there about 3 weeks ago, and it's just so sad. And I think it's just kind of gotten pushed out of the way with the election and everything. And I know you used to talk to, you had a guy that you talked to quite frequently from down there, and he was kind of giving you the lowdown of what was going on and everything. But just wanted people to know that there are still a lot of people in need down there.
Oh, yeah.
I talked to Sarge a lot, and he kind of keeps you informed about Mississippi and the Gulf Coast. But New Orleans, I mean, it's just so sad.
Yeah.
I mean, you drive through neighborhoods that, I mean, people will never live there again.
It's astonishing that this happened in our country. Not that a storm of this magnitude hit, but that the government of the United States was either unable, unwilling, or didn't give a damn to respond. And we have American citizens who are still living as though they were in I don't know, war-torn Liberia. It's incredible. The failure of leadership represented by what has happened on the U.S. Gulf Coast is just astonishing. That in itself should be an impeachable offense.
Right. Well, I mean, like I said, it's just, I mean, there was a lot of coverage about the Ninth Ward, and well, those were, you know, those were not rich people, you know, but they were hit hard, but there are neighborhoods where, I mean, people with, you know, $300,000-$400,000 houses that will never be livable again. I mean, granted, they had the means to get out and probably go somewhere else, unlike some of the people in the Ninth Ward. But, I mean, it's just, I mean, the city, it breaks my heart. I've been down there twice since moving up here, and every time I go down, and it's like it'll never be the same.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I mean, I love the city, but every time I go back, it's like I can't move back here with the way the city is. I tell my friends down there, I said, you know, you're the brave ones. You're the ones that stuck it out and went without electricity for, you know, 4 months. You know, at least I had electricity. I was the weakling that left.
Well, I just wonder, Dee, if it's going to change. I don't know. Let me leave it there, pal.
Sure.
All right,
got a
boogie. Thanks, Dee.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, sir. Appreciate you checking in. Bruce is calling from California. Hey, Bruce.
Buenas noches, Miguel.
Buenas noches, Atu.
It's good to talk to you, Ben. I've called in to make just to react to one of your callers who spoke about your language on air.
Yeah.
Mike, you are the voice of the rage that we feel. And whether you recognize it or not, that's why people listen to you. That's why we want to hear what you have to say, because you speak in the terms that we feel. I almost wish you were.
Well,
you wanted.
Yeah, I understand that, and I really do. But still, there are rules. I've never violated an FCC rule or regulation with the language. But what I'm saying is, you know, we're on from 9 to midnight here in the East, and I would assume that most people listening to talk radio in the East at that time of night are people who would not be offended. But in other parts of the country, and this is my only concern, in other parts of the country, there are kids who might be in the car with their parents or whatever, and that's my only concern. And again, I understand the rage, the anger. I understand how effective a cursing can be when you're really irritated. But my concern is just about doing talk radio the right way. So, but I think y'all have made the point tonight, though.
Yeah,
and
we love you. I mean, honest to God, that's the reason we followed you from Air America. That's the reason we're going to follow you wherever the heck you go.
All right, I got you. Thanks, Bruce.
Hey, real quick, can I give you something?
Quick.
There's an indictment of George Bush on Common Dreams.
Yeah, somebody sent me a link to that.
I sent it to you.
All right, I haven't checked it out. I will.
And there's one other thing, a quote. We have just enough religion to make us hate, but not enough to make us love one another. Jonathan Swift.
Swift, right. All right, thanks, Bruce.
Talk to you.
All right, sir. Appreciate you checking in. Thanks to everybody for participating in the program tonight, however you did that. I'm waiting for the power to go out here. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.